CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchel with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. Gray zone. What is the gray zone and how does this apply to the South China Sea and the contest with the People's Liberation Army Navy, between the U.S. Navy and our allies, between the Coast Guard and our allies? All of these questions can be answered in a new essay from James Holmes, our colleague, at 1945, How the U.S. Navy Can Compete with China in the Gray Zone. Jim is a professor at the U.S. Naval War College, but right now he's a war gamer. He's going to help us understand non-lethal contests in the gray zone. This comes from an article published at the U.S. Naval Institute's Maritime Counterinsurgency Project entitled Winning Without Gunsmoke in the South China Sea by Wendell Limbach and Eric Duckworth, two military officers with the Joint Intermediate Force Capabilities Office. All these wonderful acronyms swimming around me. Jim, thank you very much. What is a gray zone strategy? How does it apply here in this new recommendation? Good evening to you.
Evening, John. Evening, Gordon. A pleasure as always. Yeah, the gray zone, and this has become American parlance for what's going on primarily in the South China Sea, where you actually see China trying to essentially assert sovereignty, state ownership of maritime territory, as well as manufactured islands and these sorts of things that you hear about. Basically using the fishing fleet and the maritime militia embedded within that fleet as the primary implement. Essentially, they can flood the zone with lots of these fishing craft, use the China Coast Guard to protect those, even if they're within the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines or Vietnam or somebody like that, and essentially deny those coastal states their rights. The PLA Navy and shore-based PLA forces, they acted as a final backstop for that fishing fleet and for the China Coast Guard. It makes for a very coercive strategy. And it's designed not to go hot. The Chinese do not want to use gun and missile fire and so forth. They're trying to achieve geopolitical aims without war.
Without war. And that is their gray zone strategy. And this means that they're taking advantage of their, what you'd have to say, profligate shipbuilding of these last decades and are capable of overwhelming any adversary with just lots of platforms. Is that what they do, Jim?
That's essentially right. I mean, it's been going on to a certain degree since the 1970s, but it really kicked into high gear with the encounter at Scarborough Shoal a little over 10 years ago, where the Chinese essentially are still squatting. Essentially, they've taken that feature away from the Philippine Islands, which is deep within their exclusive economic zone. And it's a really hard thing to reply to, because if you think about it, if Chinese are doing this, if they're getting what they want without war, What are the ways to respond to that? It's really hard to respond to without pulling the trigger yourself, which is what these two gentlemen are getting at in their article. We need to find some way to respond to this stuff, short of actually using force ourselves and looking like the bad guys.
Gordon, I ask you to recover for an audience that hasn't been with us for more than a decade. What happened in the Scarborough Shoals? What happened to the Philippines? And what did the U.S. not do about it?
In early 2012, both Philippine and Chinese vessels, fishing vessels, swarmed Scarborough Shoal, which was about 112 nautical miles from the main Philippine island of Luzon and is very far from the nearest Chinese feature. Kirk Campbell, who is now President Biden's Asia czar, he was in the State Department. He brokered an agreement between Manila and Beijing for both sides to withdraw their craft. Only the Philippines complied, which left China in control of Scarborough. And today they are still there. They haven't started reclamation, which I think would be a red line. But nonetheless, they control Scarborough. And the Obama administration deciding not to create a confrontation has allowed China to remain in possession of Scarborough. And I think that's a grave strategic mistake.
So what you just described was a gray zone strategy that that was victorious. Is that the way you see it, Gordon?
Yes. And after their victory there, China basically then ramped up the confrontation by then using gray zone tactics at Second Thomas Shoal, also in the South China Sea, also thought to be part of the Philippines. They then started the reclamation of those islets in the South China Sea and the Spratlys, and they started ramping up pressure on the Senkakus in the East China Sea, which are thought to be Japan's. So what we did was, by not confronting gray zone operations, we emboldened the worst elements in the Chinese political system by showing everybody else that aggression worked.
You have a question for Professor Holmes, Gordon.
Professor Holmes, one thing we can do is we can sort of narrow the scope of gray zone tactics by actually, I think, public relations, by telling the world that these quote unquote gray zone tactics are really not gray zone. They're aggressive, and therefore we should confront them perhaps with force if necessary. But it seems to me that we're losing a public relations battle because we're not fighting it.
I entirely agree, and that's what these two co-authors are trying to get at. You're entirely correct. I mean, sometimes when you talk about this gray zone stuff, you'll hear at the Hill the term deterrence by disclosure, basically exposing these tactics and strategies for what they are. I mean, these are very abusive. I mean, the China Coast Guard is very abusive towards Philippine fishermen, towards Vietnamese fishermen, and so forth. The way to think about it, and this relates directly to your question, and the way to think about it, I think, is to look at the situation through the eyes of a Philippine or a Vietnamese or an Indonesian fisherman, and figure out how do we give that person heart to go out and make his living in the South China Sea, and by extension help his nation reassert its sovereign rights, which are guaranteed by treaty. The Law of the Sea Treaty, by the way, also agreed to by China until China was strong, and now it seems to think to it that it's no longer bound by treaty.
Jim, in your article, you make a distinction between what the Navy and the U.S. recently called non-lethal weapons, and that now has moved into the word capability. Help me understand, please.
That was just a minor linguist. Well, actually, I'm not sure how minor it is. It's a linguistic point in the services. We have a bad habit of talking about widgets, whether it's a gun or a missile or whatever. We call it a capability, and that's not strictly true. If you look at how the Pentagon officially defines capability, it's the ability to do something. So the ability to do something, like you were talking about public communications, that would be the ability to expose what China's doing in the South China Sea. The tool is just the tool. It would be what you use to expose that behavior, whether it's a sensor, whether it's a radio, whatever the case may be. So if it's the ability to chase Chinese forces out of these waters, and we're willing to use force, then at that point the tool could become a gun or a missile or a sensor or something like that. So try doing a little bit of hair splitting there.
But the Chinese are using capabilities, non-lethal weapons, aren't they? Isn't that what a gray zone strategy is? Everything short of shooting.
Absolutely. But the capability in the case of China would be the capability to essentially assert China's presence on a continuous basis in the South China Sea, and Coast Guard cutters, fishing craft, and yes, non-lethal weapons. Those are the tools of the trade for China. So that was the distinction I was trying to draw. They're calling it the Intermediate Force Capabilities Office. What those people are doing is they're looking for similar tools that we can use essentially to control escalation, to escalate a confrontation without actually cutting loose with guns or missiles, and again taking these confrontations hot.
Gordon, you have a question for Jim.
Jim, if I remember correctly, Indonesia was the subject of China's gray zone tactics in Indonesia's exclusive economic zone. And the Indonesians were having none of it. They actually just fired upon the Chinese, captured some ships, and at least for the time being have seemed to have put China at a position where they're no longer fishing in Indonesian waters. That seems to have been effective, but that was the use of force. It seems to me that maybe we should be thinking about the use of force in defending our allies in areas which are clearly theirs. And that way we can deal with gray zone tactics in a way that China can't counter.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Indonesia has been relatively effective at doing that, probably just because Indonesia is so far south. I mean, that's the sort of right rim of the South China Sea. It's much harder for China to compete down there unless they build a base down there, which there has been some reporting that would be done. So we'll see how that plays out. But I think you're striking a key linguistic point that I think is very important when you talk about force. I mean, the Chinese mariners, the maritime militia, and so forth, use force all the time. They're always using blocking tactics, using the hulls of their ships, elbowing aside. They've done things like poison Vietnamese fishing boats' water supply, so they have to go back. I mean, that's force. It's not violent force as we traditionally understand it, and that's really the key to gray zone operations. If regional countries can get together and agree to define that as acts of war, at that point, you have a whole different ball game. But I don't see that happening.
Is the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Coast Guard, are they open to this change of tactics to confront China with a capability that makes it inconvenient, or they have to pay a price for their tactics?
Yeah, I think the Coast Guard is. The only problem with the Coast Guard is it's too small. I mean, if you look at the size of the American Exclusive Economic Zone and all the new duties that are entrusted to the Coast Guard, and if you look at the very lean fleet that they have to carry out all these duties, there's not a whole lot of margin to do things in the South China Sea and places like that. I could see doing inventive things like perhaps forming Coast Guard detachments embedded with the Vietnamese Coast Guard or especially the Philippine Coast Guard and an allied navy or Coast Guard, and actually forming joint patrols, because at that point you're showing that the United States has skin in the game in the South China Sea. So I think there could be possibilities. I have no idea whether the discussions to that effect are going on. I certainly haven't seen it happen. But I would think we should be looking for such opportunities.
James Holmes, writing in 1945 about gray zone strategy to be countered. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.